Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
How about the Stamps? I saw you were there for that game. How was the atmosphere like?
Dude, it was. I thought it was the best game of the year, atmosphere wise. And listen, Labor Day usually is. You get the jets flying over, and the military in attendance. And I always find the tailgating to be a lot more aggressive. Like I usually roll in, you know, half hour, 45 minutes before kickoff type of thing. And it was the same deal on Monday. But the parking lot was, I'd say, the fullest I've seen it all year, maybe in a couple of seasons. So it was great to see the tailgating in full effect. And then a pretty good halftime show. I want to say their name was Wildfire, maybe. I don't really remember. Yeah. They were some country band. Not really my cup of tea, but they put on a fine show. And yeah, the game itself, the second half was great. The first half was sloppy. really on both sides of the offense. I thought both the defenses played pretty well, but like I was getting texts and DMs and people mentioning me wondering if Jake Mayer's going to be out for the second half after they went two and out on, I think, three or four straight drives. The last one, two and out on three straight. The fourth one would have been two and out, but I don't know what you call it when the second play of the drive is an interception. So, listen, it wasn't ideal in the first half. A lot of questions about Jake Mayer, but like we've seen from Dave Dickinson all year long, a long leash for his quarterbacks, and he gave that to Jake Mayer, gave him a little bit of time to kind of settle in the second half, and of course he kind of hooks up with Reggie Bagleton a couple times. They have a massive punt block on special teams, which really, I felt, kind of turned the tide of the game after that happened. And then two plays later, the Stamps have chalked up another Reggie Bagleton touchdown. It kind of felt like curtains at that point, especially because the Elks had come out to start the second half and two and out, two and out, two and out on their first three drives. So, yeah, it was a great game, and the atmosphere was good.
McMahon looked to be bumping yesterday, first and foremost. Number two, it's just amazing how, and it's great to see the Stamps avenge last year's loss, by the way, but we talked about this last week leading into the game. It doesn't matter in the Battle of Alberta, we can throw hockey into the mix too, what the records of these two teams are, these cities. It always seems to be a game that materializes and gets close, right? And I think you have to give some credit to Taylor Cornelius and you know, what Edmonton put forth. I mean, it's been an up and down start for Cornelius this season. Obviously, now the Elks are 3-9 on the campaign and really, really struggling. But from that perspective, I think you chuck the records out the window, regardless of the day, regardless of the game. Especially on Labor Day, though, it seems like you're going to get the most out of you know, both teams. And I think that was my expectation going into the game, and I think you have to give full credit to Edmonton for sticking around. But yeah, it was like a tale of two different teams. First half, a real bore and a real struggle for the Stamps, but they really found their way, and the vote of confidence is what really sticks out for me too.
Yeah, and I don't think we should be surprised, especially when like you've had a chance to talk to Dave Dickinson a couple of times now, and I don't think either of us were overly shocked. Like for me, the thing was, Jake Mayer's going to come out and start the second half. But how long is the leash here? And we didn't have to find out, which was the great thing. Like the first drive for the Stamps was not good, but then the second one they get out and they score the touchdown. Mayer goes 6-for-6 passing, including the touchdown and the 2-point convert. And you go, okay, he looks like he's kind of got some things settled in here. I also thought the offensive line didn't play overly well in the first half. Protection wasn't great, and the run game was okay. Kadeem Carey was pretty solid, but in the end, I did think it was kind of their passing game that really bailed them out of a tough first half, and an outstanding showing from the defense, and that big turnover for special teams. Really, really big moment there as well. So overall, fun game. Like you mentioned, the Stampeders take the win. The Elks take the loss. Rematch coming up Saturday, so the Stampeders will be off today. They'll hold like a very brief kind of rundown walkthrough deal Wednesday. It's going to be late in the afternoon, like 4:30 type of deal. Then they'll have an actual practice on Thursday, travel Friday, and then it'll be back up in Edmonton to battle the Elks at Commonwealth in a rematch Saturday night. And very much looking forward to that too, because there's some guys that I thought really popped for Edmonton. Mitchell and Brown were very solid. I thought Cornelius, you know, this is a guy who's probably, you know, batting out of his league. He's maybe not really a major leaguer at this level, but at the same time, a guy who understands his strengths, which would be size, using his feet, and slung it pretty good a couple of times there. Like that 48-yard touchdown where he threw it over the top and Natrell Jamerson was a pretty nice throw. So overall, pretty fun game. Great second half. Look forward to the rematch.
Bottom line, a win is a win is a win, right?
Yes, sir.
And so the Stamps took care of business. They'll try to double up next week. But do you think along those lines, the Bo Levi Mitchell to Hamilton rumors are going to start to pick up? I don't know if you checked that out yesterday in the early game, but like it was the total poop emoji for Hamilton, who, by the way, had sort of had been dominating, you know, the, you know, Toronto Argonauts for a variety of years, a long, long time, especially at their new field. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they put forth that, and it's been a real, real struggle for the Ticats this season. Do you think those rumors start to pick up here?
Man, I do wonder what happens with Bo. I think a trade of Bo Levi Mitchell is really hard to do. He would want, he would need to want to do it. Like the thing, like Bo still gave out the game ball for the offense after the game yesterday. Like he's very much a part of this team. It's not like he's kind of just been relegated to some shadow third string backup quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seems so far fetched to me for a Bo Levi Mitchell trade to happen. To me, it feels like one of those things where at the end of the year he probably rides off into the sunset and finds a home somewhere else. For me, Hamilton, I don't know. I've got issues with Dane Evans as a quarterback. I just think that the way he takes care of the ball is just frankly not good enough. The turnovers this year have been egregious and frankly have cost his team multiple wins. Like in the instance where you could look to a single play, a single moment and say that lost you the game. I feel like that's happened a few times to Dane Evans this year. You really wonder about the move to go to Jeremiah Masoli in the offseason or to kind of part ways with Jeremiah. He ended up in Ottawa, of course, got hurt. Garrett Marino ended his season like a goon, and then we are here. But I don't know. The Ticats are a team that need a quarterback like a lot of teams in the CFL, so I could see it in that sense. But I also do just wonder if this is something where the Stamps say, nah, we're good. We're going to just hold on to our guy here. And because this is a quarterback-driven league, like you look around and what happens to this team if they rattle off a handful of wins, they get themselves into second in the West, they get themselves a home playoff date, and then something happens to Jake Mayer. And then what? Now you're going to Tommy Stevens, who is a great short yardage quarterback, an elite short yardage quarterback, but has no experience running the first team offense. Like that's why I do believe that this is a situation where they'll probably keep Bo around, especially because he doesn't seem to be hurting the mood or any of that type of thing. Like still participating and being around the group.
Yeah, my question off that would be like, can you fully hand the keys to the car to Mayer, knowing that Bo Levi Mitchell, the legend, the future Hall of Famer, is behind him? Are you giving him like a sort of like a Cavalier instead of a Porsche at this point in time?
Yeah, I like.
We love Cavaliers on this show.
Yeah,
they
come up an awful lot. It's a strange thing. I've never talked about Cavaliers this much, but yeah, I don't know. I could see it. I just have a hard time with the team. Because they feel like they can win. They feel like they can win every year. This isn't a league where you commit to a rebuild, right?
True.
Because coming first in the draft doesn't help you that much. You're not getting a Connor Bedard. Like, football's the ultimate team sport type of thing, right? So it's a lot tougher in that sense. And I think that this year you got to try and win. And as much as, it could be kind of handing the reins over, I do think this is a good team. I do think this is a good offense. And Jake Mayer would be able to do the job. But this is a violent sport. People get hurt all the time. In a lot of situations, it's fluke. So that's my biggest thing. I just go back to, you know, you want depth at the quarterback position, and Bo Levi Mitchell is the best backup quarterback in this league, and it's, frankly, not even close.
Did you have a chance to check out the Women's World Championship gold medal final on the weekend?
I did.
U.S. and Canada are they're incapable of playing a boring game.
No, they're not, but I didn't. I was driving home from the hat while this game was on the go, so I missed this one. But hey, Canada wins 2-1, beat the Americans. You probably took it in, and give us your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and I do think it's must-see TV at this point in time. I know they always hook up in the gold medal final, and maybe it's redundant at this point, but it's always a fantastic game. Breanne Jenner scores twice. And Rene Desbiens made an unbelievable save late in the game. And just, there's always theatrics between these two sides at whatever level they play at. Could be the World Junior, could be the women's game or the men's game.
Yeah.
I just thought it was phenomenal. And I don't know if you saw this too, the comments from Abby Roque, an American player after the tournament, saying Canada has lots of players who dive around. I don't know about you, but like, it sounds like a sore loser to me. And I understand where she's coming from. So to defend her, there was a tough call to kick off the game. She took a penalty, and I believe Canada may have scored, may have not. But, I mean, anywhere you get, we can get into the Jays conversation too, because it seems like every second game, the umpiring is becoming a bigger and bigger story. I could only wonder what the postseason is going to hold for the Blue Jays and other teams in Major League Baseball. But I think officiating and this type of officiating is subject to that of any sport, right? Like, where there's going to be mistakes made, but to come out after the tournament and say that, you've been dominated by Canada in recent memory. They keep beating the States. So I guess all the penalties they're taking, right?
Yeah. Penalty minutes in that game were 8 against the U.S. and 6 against the Canadians. Mm-hmm. So had one.
They're diving though.
And the Canadians, I don't believe, scored on the power play. I'm pretty sure both of Jenner's goals came about a minute and a half apart, and neither of them were with the man advantage. So, yeah, okay, sure, like, fine, I guess, if you want to complain. But, like, the Canadians dominated every other game they played. So, okay, diving, I don't know if you're going to... And then they
seems
beat
like
you
an
2
excuse
to 1,
to me.
And they don't score on the power. It seems like a bit of a sore loser. Bit of someone with a little butt hurt, perhaps, that got all the way to the top. And honestly, I believe we're probably the favorites going into it. Like, I saw Haley Salvian tweeting about it and saying that this was a very much transformed American team, that it was maybe the deepest American team that she had seen in an event like this in quite some time. So this was a very good American group, and you just got beat. Wear it.
Plain and simple, my dude. Speaking of which, we talked about the Jays ad nauseum last week, and rightfully so.
You think Bo Bichette heard our show?
He must have, man, because I made a note and a star beside this guy. I had to give him props. I still wonder about him defensively, but he has really started to wake up at the dish. Doubleheader alone yesterday, they sweep the Orioles, 2 massive wins. He goes 6-for-10, 3 bombs, 7 RBIs. The last 15 games, he's batting 400, 24-for-60, 10 extra base hits, 14 RBIs. He's back in the 3-hole in the order. And again, this team has the confidence. I know they didn't look great against the Pirates. That ballpark's phenomenal, by the way, but they swept there. We talked about that on Friday. And then just a crucial, crucial 4-game set with the Orioles, and they come out and win 2 straight in the doubleheader yesterday. They took care of business, and we need more from this team moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. This was a big moment, man. Like, we talked about going into Pittsburgh, like, 2 of 3 probably not going to be good enough. Baltimore had been playing some pretty good ball of late. Minnesota had won like 5 or 6. Now, granted, when you look at the standings coming out of the weekend, things are exceptionally different, especially after Monday's action, where the Jays were able to take those 2 wins against the Orioles in that doubleheader. But at this point, like, I'm pretty happy with the weekend that was for the Blue Jays, right? Like, it's been kind of wild to watch the flipping and the flopping, because they went and they, what was it, 2 weekends ago, it was the good series against the Yankees, and then it was the putrid series against the Angels, and then it was a sweep of the Pirates, plus a doubleheader bingo against the Orioles, and all of a sudden you've won 5 in a row and have put that gap between you and Baltimore to 4.5 games with a month left to play, and 2 more games this week, and then 2 big ones this week. You know, Mitch White in a pretty big spot here tonight. 5:05 start, one you can listen to on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, the home of the Blue Jays. And this is a good spot to be in. Like, this weekend, you got to be feeling confident if you're a member of this team.
And to that point, they really can put the foot on the throats of the Baltimore Orioles, who have really been a revelation, playing with house money at this point in time. But I think, showing that they're young the last couple of days, namely Gunnar Henderson, who we talked about last week, makes his debut, and he was booting the ball all around the field in game 1 yesterday, which, by the way, I thought the umpiring was horrendous on both sides. The strike zone, like, your guess as good as to mine, what was a strike, what wasn't. And of course, we saw the whole thing with Kevin Gausman makes his return to Baltimore, and all of a sudden he's balking. Having said that, like, I mean, it's quite clear, and just sort of the way he builds up his pitch from the stretch. I mean, does he really come to a full stop is the question. And I think, to his defense, he's been doing it for a long period of time. Nobody's called him on it. And he felt like Jeff Nelson, who called him for the balk, this was premeditated. And the fact that he came out with a mission to call this balk as soon as somebody was on first base, he did so. And again, Bo Bichette, the MVP of the weekend, because I'm sure you caught this. He stepped in right away because Gausman was headed towards an ejection. And if you're the Jays, considering what we've seen pitching-wise at bits and pieces this season, last thing you wanted Gausman in that game. So I think Bo Bichette deserves a lot of credit for stepping in there too.
Well, especially after you do a bullpen day on Saturday against the Pirates.
Yeah.
Really, and that, if I'm not mistaken, that was in the first inning, wasn't it? Like, mm-hmm.
It was early.
He allows that single, and then, it's one of those things. But you bring up a great point. Like, this is how Kevin Gausman is throwing the ball for his entire career that's spanned the better part of a decade. And I think they said on the broadcast that he's had four balks in his entire career, and that was the fourth, and that was the second one this year. It's like one of those things where you're like, okay, well, if you want to call it, I guess you can call it every game, but you also have to understand who's on the mound and kind of what his style is, and it wasn't. So, yeah, Gausman frustrated. I saw his comments after the game. He was still very frustrated with the umpire, but you bring up a great point. Bo Bichette flying in there, saving his pitcher from an ejection, because, man, Gausman takes those first couple steps off the mound, and then he starts walking with a little bit of intent.
A strut.
Yeah, and he brings up the hand, and he looks like he's going to give him a strong one right in the chest. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. That's a quick heave-ho, and Gausman ended up dealing for the rest of the game, which was great to see.
It always seems like the umpires get involved in some facet, man. Like, it's just become unbearable.
Welcome to the ump show, bro.
Yeah, like, it's become unbearable in 2022. Like, even the strike zone, the umpire, I don't even remember his name. Like, he was fighting it yesterday, and I felt for the Orioles, actually, in game one, where there was a couple calls that just didn't go their way. I know it cost the Jays, in terms of a non-call early on in the game in game one, but I think overall, the strike zone was a zoo, man. Like, they had no clue. You had both dugouts barking, and I think if an umpire loses a game early, they never get it back. And I think to an extent that happened in game one, but full credit to both sides. They kept playing. And I guess a bit of credit to the umpires for giving Gausman a bit of a leash, because more times than not, we've seen time and time again where somebody does less and gets the heave-ho when they didn't. And again, they need Gausman. They need the starting pitching. I thought Jose Berríos was decent enough in the second game. Obviously, the Jays throwing a bit of a curveball. Lyle's not pitching. He wasn't feeling well, so it was a bullpen game for the Orioles in game two. But again, Bo Bichette, when he's at his best offensively, I don't think we're talking as much about him defensively, if that makes sense. Like, if he continues to hit this way, I think people will forget quickly his struggles defensively. But it's funny how things even out, right? Because depending on who you ask, and there's a lot of people out there, like, there have been mistakes that have led to tough losses, I think, for the Jays. And now Bo Bichette single-handedly may have won the Jays this doubleheader here against the Orioles yesterday.
Yeah, 100%. Made a couple of nice throws to Vladdy as well over at first base. I thought the defense wasn't, the usual circus ride that it kind of has been for the last little bit. Yeah. But in the same breath, you know, you got to give props to that guy when he's able to come out and do what he's been able to do this past week. So it's a big step in the right direction for the Blue Jays. Tonight's game, like we said, it's a 5:05 start. Very much looking forward to this one. It's going to be a lot of fun as the Jays look to really extinguish the Baltimore Orioles from the wild card race. I mentioned this, 4.5 games back, with the Orioles now having lost 3 games in a row. Tampa and Seattle just a half game up on Toronto as well, and just a month left in the season. That's so wild to me.
It is. Time really flies, even when you play 162. And the New York Yankees have been quite the soap opera, say, the last month and a half. They, you know, just have a 5-game lead down from, like, what, 12 and a half, 13 games maybe a month ago. Tampa's pressing, but like that's my fascination too. Assuming at this point now with a 4.5 game gap, we'll see if they can, you know, make it 5.5 potentially tonight against Baltimore. If the Jays continue to move up, like they're only half a game back of Seattle, of the Rays. I know you don't want to pick your opponent. I think both teams would be tough to play against. I guess at this point, any team you play in the postseason will be difficult, but I'm not sure I really like the matchup against Seattle. I'm not sure I really like the matchup against Tampa. I'm not sure you feel the same way, but I think this time here specifically, it becomes about bullpen. It becomes about pitching. I know Tampa's really battered and bruised. There's a lot of guys injured on that team, but it's still Tampa. It's still a house of horrors, I think, for the most part for the Jays. And then Seattle's got that 1-2-3 in their rotation. Robbie Ray spearheading things where they've been so hot for such a long period of time that I think of the Jays, I'm probably trying to stay away from them too.
Oh, yeah. At all costs, trying to avoid them. It's tough right now, right? Like trying to pick your opponent. There's still so much time. It is. I believe it was John Schneider who said it just over this weekend. He was like, "Yeah, there's not really any point in looking at the standings right now. Like the wild card race is an absolute jumble. You kind of got to give it a couple of weeks to clean itself up." Granted, this past weekend, things have really changed. Like the two teams that were at threshold for the morning report have dropped out of the threshold, Nick. They're way back. And I don't know if they're going to come back. I don't know if we'll see them again for the rest of the season, frankly.
So you're telling me when you do your morning report in about 5 minutes from now, when you start it, we're not even going to have a board to explain the teams that are chasing the Jays right now? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, we're going to talk about Baltimore because they played the Jays, so they've found a way to sneak their way into the morning report. They've grifted their way in. But the Minnesota Twins. Sorry, boys.
Yeah, they're flip-flop guy right now.
Yeah, they've dropped to 6.5 games back despite going 6-4 in their last 10. Mm-hmm. Not good.
They're pretenders from the beginning. We all knew that, right?
Yeah. But then there's the White Sox, too. 7.5 games back. We didn't think they were going to be pretenders, and they have also followed out of it just one game over 500 at this point. So that's kind of wild, too. Hey, did you get totally blown over by the biggest signing of the weekend? Evgeny Svechnikov with the San Jose Sharks for a one-year, two-way deal, $750,000?
I caught that. We saw Eric Branstrom re-sign yesterday, and Ryan Murray, like what, 10 years removed, ends up in Edmonton right after all that and the soap opera surrounding that. Yeah, like we're at a point like those PTOs, right? And I think still the names I'm looking at, Tyler Motte, Evan Rodriguez, and obviously there's lineage a bit to Calgary. I think the expectation is that they're looking at a bottom six guy. And to me, it would be Evan Rodriguez, but I'm sure we'll find out in the next couple weeks because we get closer and closer to camp, man. Like I can't believe, I believe it's October 7th. It begins, at least in Europe, the Preds and the Sharks getting together in Prague, I believe. So we're a month away tomorrow, man. Like, time is flying as we get set for another NHL season here.
Do you know what I did over the weekend?
What?
I made plans to get a whole bunch of people together and watch the Young Stars Flames.
Nice.
And I don't even know who they're playing on the 16th, but they're going to play at 6:30. I'm going to watch that, and I'm going to be absolutely fired up because hockey is back. I know the Hitmen had an intra-squad game. They've got some preseason games coming up on the weekend. Obviously, it's the WHL, and it's a little bit earlier than everything else. I was kind of hinting at also the JT Miller monster extension that I think stunned a lot of people. And we'll get into that as the show goes on as well. Here, let me do this. I'll give you our guest list real quick, and then we'll get into the morning report because we're going to kick it off with the JT Miller extension. We got a great lineup. Adnan Virk, our friend and yours, joining us just after 7 o'clock today. We're going to talk a little bit of the Dallas Stars. That with Mike Heike. He's a writer for the Stars website. We're going to ask him about Jake Oettinger and Jason Robertson. When's that deal getting done? What's going to be the deal with the Dallas Stars? That'll be at 7:30, so midway through hour two. And then to kick off hour number three, Kevin Woodley. Oh, have I missed the chats with Kevin, the goaltending guru, and also covers the Vancouver Canucks. So we'll ask him about the JT Miller thing. We can also ask him about Jake Oettinger. We can ask him about Jacob Markstrom. We could really ask him about any goaltender that you want. Whatever you want, Nick. Whoever.
Let's do it. I'm fired up about it. It's always fun to talk with Kevin again because he's got such an extensive knowledge. And Congrats to Jacob Markstrom and his wife expecting their first child too. We saw that over the weekend, right?
Yes, they are. And Jamon Giapane got engaged as well. So a couple of hat tips and congratulations to a couple of Flames who are getting set for camp with a couple of personal milestones as well. But we'll dive into the JT Miller extension, the weekend that was for the Jays, and so much more. The Morning Report from Motorworks is coming at you next, right here as we roll on. The big show in the morning is underway on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let's get to the Morning Report, though. It's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet all competitors' quotes. You can find them on 51st Ave and 3rd Street in the Southeast.
Marty Rose.
Matt Rose.
Matt Rose. Alrighty, well, I hope you had just a great Labor Day. The Jays are cooking, the Stamps got their dub, and so did the Canadian ladies. We'll dive into all of that, but first, Nick, a little time to rejoice, because on this Morning Report, this on September the 6th, and for most of the Morning Reports moving forward throughout the hockey season, we're going to be starting with a little bit of puck. Over the weekend, the biggest surprise was no doubt the long-term extension that JT Miller signed with the Vancouver Canucks.
If you're wondering what the JT stands for and why he uses that, it's Jimmy Timmy. Jimmy Timmy Miller, and it's just too awkward, so.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Oh.
Oh.
I don't even know who said that. Like, I thought it was Chris Kerber. I have this clip in my folder from 2017.
I think it's Dean Brown, the Senators broadcast.
You're right. Sure. Yeah. You are very correct, Dumas. See, look at him. I'm so glad you're back.
There
just
you
to
go.
Clean up all my errors. But that's an old clip. I play it anytime we do Jimmy Timmy stuff. But 7-year extension for Miller, AAV of $8 million, $56 million total. This will keep Miller signed in Vancouver through the next 8 seasons as he's got one more year remaining on his current deal. Many thought he was going to get traded, want to go back to the U.S., maybe the East Coast. Maybe thought the Rangers or the Avalanche. Instead, signs long-term with the Canucks. He had a career season, 32 goals and 99 points over 80 games last season. Turned 30 in March. Full no move for the first 4 years and then a modified no trade where the player will submit a 15-team trade list for the final 3 years of the deal. Quite a big one, Nick.
Money talks, right?
Yes, sir.
I think anytime a contract like this is signed, there's always the community is like, oh, that's too much. It's too long. He's going to be 3,000 years old. But, like, I just think you look at the going rate, you look at the market. I think if he hit the open market next season, it would have been 8.5. It would have been 9. So to get him at 8, I think is decent value for Vancouver. And again, we're talking about a guy who had 32 tucks last year, 99 points. Like, he is so valuable to the Vancouver Canucks. And I like the fact that they had a value on a potential trade and they didn't take less for it. Mm-hmm. I think they realized that JT Miller meant more to this team than to trade him for, you know, assets that weren't good enough in their minds. So they played that tightrope game and ultimately he re-signs there. And I like the fit. It's been a crazy career, you know, from where he's come from, the New York Rangers to Tampa, to finding the stability and consistency here with the Vancouver Canucks. And suddenly, foreseeable future up the middle, Vancouver is extremely stacked, as we know.
Do you know what I'm excited to ask Kevin Woodley when he joins us to start hour three? What does this mean for Bo Horvat?
Apparently not much. We heard that on Friday too, right? Like, that was the first question asked. Apparently they've been discussing a contract. I just don't know how you let your captain go, right?
Well, then who's leaving?
Tyler Myers.
Oh, good luck. Good luck moving that. Other signings.
I love the response.
Yeah. The Oilers signed 28-year-old Ryan Murray for 1 year at league minimum, 37 games last season, helped the Avalanche get to the postseason, but he didn't play in the playoffs, but he did get a ring. Sam Gagner signed in Winnipeg, 1 year at $750K for the 32-year-old veteran. I thought he was older. RFA Eric Brandstrom signed in Ottawa, 1 year at $900K, and Evgeny Svechnikov, the bigger brother of Andre in Carolina, 1 year, two-way deal with San Jose.
Hi, Sharks.
Also, not news, but if you haven't heard it yet, Jacob Markstrom was on 32 Thoughts with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick from the European Media Tour. New episode dropped on Friday. Great interview with the Flames goaltender who believes that this year's team is better than last.
We're better, for sure. Looking at the centers we have and down the middle, you need to be deep down the middle to be successful, especially in the playoffs. And And then our defensive core is, you got my favorite player of all time, Chris Tanev, there. So, you know, I'm happy he's there. And then, you know, with everything else, you got Rasmus Anderson, who had a career year last year. Noah Hanifin, who's, you know, he was healthy pretty much all season and played great all year. You add Uyghur to that. And then Sidorov, who had a, he was super important for us.
So he likes the parts that are still there. He likes the center depth, and he likes the blue line. You can find that interview. It's a great interview, and it's slapped together with Senators forward Tim Stützle on the latest episode of 32 Thoughts on any of your podcast channels. Also, later today, Daryl Sutter, out at the ranch, interviewed by Eric Francis. That's going to be 2:30 on our station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And I don't know what podcast channel it's going to be on yet, but we're finding out, and we'll have it to you by the end of the show. Let's move to the diamond with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Two little haters out there. Suck on that one for tonight, will you?
I don't know if you saw Gibby on the socials, Nick, over the weekend, but he was referencing that because a great weekend against the Pittsburgh Pirates. They got the job done. Listen, they swept in Pittsburgh 4-0, 4-1, 4-3, their final scores. Manoa got the first win, pitched near where he went to college in front of a ton of friends and family. Outstanding performance Friday. Bullpen win Saturday, Ross Stripling got the dub on Sunday, so feeling good heading into Baltimore for a four-game set and a Labor Day doubleheader. Making up that game rained out back on August the 10th. Game 1, Kevin Gausman facing his former team, 26-year-old Mike Bauman on the bump for the Orioles. This one didn't start well for the Jays. Should have, though. Great pitch by Gausman. Should have been a strikeout. Instead, called a ball, so full count with two outs for Santander on the next pitch.
The 3-2 pitch. Hit high and deep out to right field. Hernandez turns around, watches it go over the flags in right field. That is going to make the Blue Jays absolutely furious. Anthony Santander is 26th of the season on the very next pitch where the Blue Jays felt that he should have been struck out.
So that solo shot gets the O's out to an early lead in the first inning, but the Jays did not cower. Matt Chapman doubled in the second. That set up the tying run for Kevin Biggio.
Pitch. Hit hard towards the middle. Past the dive of the second baseman, Henderson. Around third, Chapman will come in to score. He'll tie the game on the RBI base hit from Kevin Biggio.
Alejandro Kirkwood ground into a force out in the top of the third, but scored George Springer in the process, giving the Jays the lead. Then in the fifth, they'd add to their lead. Bo Bichette grounding into a force out. It would be Springer again crossing the plate, so 3-1 after five innings. Bottom six, the Orioles did look to respond.
It's Ryan Mountcastle on a line out to right. Hernandez started in. Now he goes back. He turns around at the wall, and it's off the high wall, and then eludes his reach on the rebound. Rutschman's rounding third, coming to the plate. The throw is cut off. Rutschman scores on a ball banked off the wall by Ryan Mountcastle. He stands at second with an RBI double, and we've got a one-run game.
Pesky. Ryan Mountcastle scores Rutschman on the fly ball double off the first pitch. 3-2 with Kevin Gausman still on the bump going into the seventh. Toronto holding a one-run lead. Gausman would go 6 2/3 when it was all said and done. He allowed two earned runs on seven hits, no walks, six strikeouts, left with the lead, and the lead extended shortly after he left. We take you to the top of the eighth.
3-2. Swinging a high fly ball straightaway center field. Mullins back at the wall. Does it have enough? It is gone! Teoscar Hernandez with a majestic shot. Straightaway center field. Lands it at the base of the batter's eye.
That's 20 for Hernandez. That solo shot gave Toronto a 4-2 lead. Santander would answer in the bottom of the eighth with his own solo shot off Tim Mazza, so 4-3 again, but then Toronto pulled away in the ninth.
And the pitch. Swing at a ground ball through the hole on the left side. Base hit. Wave towards the plate. They want to score Gurriel. Up with the throw comes Hayes. It's way offline. Gurriel scores. Throw to second base. Not in time. Everybody safe. First and second for Toronto. The 1-2. Right back up the middle. Base hit into center field. The Blue Jays are going to extend the lead. The ball juggled by Mullins, so no play at second. Springer races to third on an RBI single from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. The Blue Jays now in front, 6-3 in the ninth.
And Bo Bichette would tack on another RBI as well. He went 3-for-5 at the dish in the first game of the doubleheader with two RBIs, so 7-3, the final score in game one, and four straight wins. Kevin Gausman got the win, Nick, and a pretty good one as well.
Yeah, he's fired up, obviously, in front of family and friends. His return to Baltimore, and I think he's been exceptional this season, going, I think, tit for tat, if you will, with Robbie Ray, mm-hmm. what he's doing with Seattle, especially in the second half. And I think exactly what the doctor ordered, a game one victory here for the Blue Jays.
So a chance for five straight in the evening. Jose Barrios taking on the bump for the second half of the doubleheader. He faced 27-year-old lefty Keegan Aiken. Once again, Toronto trailing early. We take you to the bottom of the second.
The 1-0. Hit high and deep out to right field. That ball's long gone. Lands in the pennants. 1-0 Baltimore on the home run by Rougned Odor.
Oh, yeah, every Jays fan's favorite. Rougned Odor takes Barrios yard for the early 1-0 lead, but the Jays would jump into the lead with a single swing of the bat in the top of the third.
Bichette clobbers one high and deep down the left field line, and it is gone! Bo Bichette with an absolute no-doubter over the new wall and left. A go-ahead three-run home run. On the very first pitch that he sees here in the third inning, he torched it.
So a three-run bomb for Bichette after Jackie Bradley doubled and George Springer walked. Jays jump out in front, so then their pitcher was able to settle in. No runs scored for either team in the fourth or fifth innings, but then in the sixth, the Jays took flight once again.
First pitch hit on a line out to deep right field. Back goes Santander, stops at the wall, and it is gone! Over the high wall in right field. Bo Bichette tattoos his second of the day.
That made it 4-1, and the floodgates opened. Kevin Biggio would hit a solo shot. Jackie Bradley Jr. with a ground rule double, scoring a couple of runs. So they were up 7-1. That takes us to the top of the seventh. Bo Bichette looking for the hattie.
Bo's got a two-homer night. He swings and he charges one. Straight away center field, going back to the bullpen, and it is gone! A three-homer game for Bo Bichette. He's homered to all three fields. The first was a bomb to left, a rifle shot to right, and this one, a rising, soaring line drive to straightaway center field.
Yes, sir, Bo Bichette heating up. You know what I would say, Nick? I'd say he is
smoking.
Can he keep it running this hot for two more months, six more weeks?
Let's hope.
Something like that?
One of the best movies of all time, in my opinion.
An elite Canadian actor. I will not take any further questions. Barrios came out in the bottom of the seventh. Probably not the best call in hindsight. He'd get the bases juiced before allowing a run. Then he got pulled. Another run scored. The Orioles make a push, but the five RBI night for Bichette, too much. 8-4 your final score. The Jays win both games to open up the series, and they win five games over 4 days of Labor Day weekend. Have to be happy with that, Nick. And what do you have to say to Bo Bichette?
A lot. Not at an apology level just yet, because I don't think he's great defensively, but I think you get subtle reminders offensively that this guy's got absolute steez, got a bright future and potential. You heard it there. Goes to left, goes to center, goes to right. I don't know what the hell they did there in Baltimore, moving left field back like 20 feet. Matt Chapman hit a couple shots in the first game, I believe, that would have been gone in the previous iteration of the ballpark. But you look at the configuration, too. It doesn't make sense, but... I do love beating Baltimore, so great to see the Jays take care of business yesterday.
All right, we got to zip through the rest here. In the wild card race, Tampa Bay beginning a three-game set at the top of the sinking Red Sox. The Rays coming off taking 2 of 3 versus the Yankees, trying to make this AL East a race, but still trying to secure down the wild card spot first and foremost. Bottom seven, the Rays were trailing 3-2.
And sends one into right center field. That's going to be in there. Extra bases. Bruin scores to tie the game. Margot now to second with a double, and he's in scoring position. 3-3 ball game. Ground ball, that's a fair ball. Up the right side beyond the bullpen. Margot scores the go-ahead run. Peralta in at second with a double. Rays lead 4-3.
They small ball their way to a win, put themselves into a tie with Seattle for that first wild card spot in the American League East. Nope. First wild card spot in the American League. They're second in the AL East. To the Seattle Mariners, they entered Monday the new AL wild card leaders, winners of 7 in a row, coming off a sweep of the Tigers and Guardians. But could they start their next series against an AL Central member on a winning note? We picked this one up in the top of the third. Pardon me, we're going to keep going here. Lance Lynn getting the start for the White Sox in this one. He was up 3-1, had that lead, didn't relinquish it.
And there's a swing and a miss. Lance Lynn, 23 swings and misses, tied for the most by any Sox pitcher this year, tying his own mark.
He went 7 innings, striking out 11. 3-2 ends up being the final score. Nevertheless, Chicago doing a big favor for Tampa and Toronto, snapping that win streak at 7 games. Tampa and Seattle a half game up on Toronto in the wild card race. Toronto holding the third wild card spot. Baltimore 4.5 games back. Minnesota 6.5 games back. It was Labor Day weekend in the CFL. The Red Blacks beat the Alouettes. The Bombers beat the Riders. The Argos got by the Ticats, all leading up to the crown jewel, the Elks and Stamps, from McMahon on a beautiful Monday. They had the Jets flying over, the military in attendance. The first half was no good. Edmonton led 8-7 at halftime, but the Stamps turned it on in the third. I was getting DMs and texts and mentions about Bo Levi Mitchell, like we've seen, from head coach Dickinson all season. A long leash for the quarterback. It paid off. Mayer, money in the second half. First drive, not great, but then on the second, Mayer, 6-for-6 passing, including a TD to Bagleton and a two-point convert to Malik Henry. Two touchdowns for Reggie Bagleton, helping the Stampeders take a big 26-18 victory. Listen, it wasn't a Mona Lisa. It was more like painting the barn. They were 12.5-point favorites to start. I jumped on at 15.5 after they scored the first touchdown of the game like an idiot. It wasn't pretty, but listen, they got the job done, and that's what you got to do.
All that matters, my dude.
Women's World Hockey Championship, Canada and the U.S. Canada wins 2-1. Breanne Jenner, two goals in the second period, a minute and 24 seconds apart. The first one did come on the power play. The Canadians would not relinquish that 2-0 lead. Abby Roque would score for the Americans. Would not be enough. Canada wins 2-1. Well, get an outshot, 21-19. Great showing for Anne-Renee Debien. On the pitch, Cavalry FC in a Labor Day matinee out in the Maritimes, taking on Halifax. Full-time, 0-0 draw out in the Maritimes. Gross. Despite doubling the Wanderers in shot attempts, shots in goal, and having 59% possession.
Any delays? Any weather delays to report this week?
I did not see anything about any weather delays, but I'm sure we'll chat with Tommy later on and get the latest. At the U.S. Open, quarterfinals today, no more Canadians in action. Berrettini will go against Rude, Kyrgios against Kochanov on the men's side. American Coco Gauff is going to be the fan favorite as the women's quarterfinals continue today. And on the golf side of things, at the LPGA Dana Open, Brooke Henderson finished as the top Canadian. Tough opening round. She was 13 under in her final three rounds, six strokes back of the leader when it was all said and done. And the PGA season is on hold, in between seasons, I guess. But the LIV Tour held their third event over the weekend. Dustin Johnson won a three-man playoff that included newcomer Joaquin Neiman to win the tournament. That's a $4 million prize for Johnson as the top player. Cam Smith finished in a tie for fourth in his first LIV event. And shout out to Siwon Kim. He was 48th, 16 over par, $120,000 just for showing up.
Wow, that's a good chunk of coin. I'd love to have that, man, just to show up.
Yeah, to shoot 16 over three rounds.
It's not
one
good,
of the
eh?
Nicer courses. Woof. That's it.
And good night and good luck to you, sir.
That's your morning report, and it's brought to you by Motorworks, exceeding all expectations, BMW repairs and service in a state-of-the-art facility where they'll meet and beat all competitors' quotes on 51st Ave and 3rd Street, Southeast. Adnan Virk joins us next, talking baseball, movies, and whatever the heck we feel. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.